You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Sunny with a high near 87 degrees, southwest winds around 7 miles per hour. Tonight, there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms, but it's going to be mainly after 7 p.m. It'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 65, south winds around 5 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation is 60%. Tuesday, a slight chance of showers before noon, then mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming very sunny with a high near 85. Calm wind becoming 5 to 8 miles per hour. And a chance of precipitation is only 20%. So that means scattered and you may not see any. Tuesday night, it'll be mostly clear with a low around 56 with calm winds. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 84 and 5 to 7 mile per hour winds in the afternoon. And Wednesday night, it'll be mostly clear with a low around 57. Welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged today to have with us two amazing guests, Robin Marks, who has been here before, and we go back a ways.
Hi, Larry.
Hi, Robin. And Robin is community outreach director in charge of or whatever at Princeton House.
I'm your community liaison.
There you go. That's close enough. And she brought with us, she brought with her today Lisa Johnson, who is an RN and has been for almost 29 years. And she's worked in critical care, radiology, pain management, and same-day surgery, and she's been in the electroconvulsive therapy program for about 6 years. So, Lisa, welcome.
Thank you.
And like I said, this is NAMI's hour, courtesy of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, and there is a NAMI in every chapter, there's a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers. We have no paid staff. We have no office. We work out of our houses, use our own phones, that sort of thing. In September, we're going to teach one of our classes called a family-to-family class. And everything we do is free. There is no charge. There's no charge for the material, the binders, nothing that. But it's a 12-week course. It's going to be on a Thursday night held at 52 East Main Street in Flemington. From 7 to 9:30 at night, but you do have to register. So if you would like, if you have someone in your family who has a mental health issue and you'd like to know more about it and what that person is going through and what you can do to help, you can call Priscilla at 908-735-4465, or you can call the NAMI line, which is not manned, but somebody will get back to you within 24 hours, and that's 908-285-0500. And now, getting back to our guests. How you been, Robin?
Very good, Larry.
You've been working hard?
All summer long.
Have you? Yeah, no vacation?
I took 2 weeks in June, and then the summer was just devoted to being out in the community.
And now it's over, too.
No.
Another week, it's gone, you know. But it's amazing how fast it goes. The older I get, the faster it flies by. I don't know if you feel the same way. Well, you're not old, so that's, you know. That's
Larry's being nice.
Diplomatic.
Diplomatic, yes.
All right, Lisa, you have been in electroconvulsive therapy, which is acronym is ECT. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you up front, I hate acronyms. I was on a mental health board, and they gave us a book about yay thick with all these acronyms in it. I looked at it, are you out of your mind? I'm going to remember all these, you know. But anyway, ECT stands for electroconvulsive therapy. And maybe you can tell us exactly what that is.
Sure. Well, ECT has been around for a long, long time, which is good and bad. Because it's been around for a long, long time, people still think of it as it was in the 1970s. And just like you wouldn't want to have your appendix out like they did in the 1970s, ECT is also advanced like any other medical procedure. So ECT is the strongest tool that we have in our toolbox for depression. Pharmacy companies will constantly try to create new and better medications to help with depression, which we here in America have a lot of. There can be, you know, in any given year, over 30,000 suicides a year just from depression alone. And that is an old statistic. That's from 2012. I'm sure current statistics, suicide rate is much higher. So medications take a pretty convoluted route. It has to, you know, be absorbed and metabolized by your body. Mm-hmm. We're all created differently. And you're hoping that it's going to cross the blood-brain barrier and help to produce dopamine and serotonin, and that's kind of the idea of it. With ECT, we don't depend on any of that. It's external. We're able to control it. We have a great understanding of it, as with any medical procedure nowadays. And the scary part of it is that we do purposely cause a small seizure. It's a small controlled seizure, but it's that seizure that's like kind of a reset, like if you reset your computer when it's not doing its proper thing. And it's that helps the depression rapidly within 3 weeks, whereas with medication, it can be 4 weeks to 12 weeks. And that's even if it's the right medicine at the right dose for you. Correct. Where again, with ECT, we don't have to do that sit and wait type of thing. There is still a little bit of a sit and wait, like one treatment doesn't do it. You have to have three treatments a week for about 3 to 4 weeks. Right. But at the end, at least when ECT is over, if any side effects that you have are over, with medications, you still, you know, will constantly have to remain on them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like anything else, I guess, that some medication may work for you.
Correct.
And wouldn't work for me.
That's right.
You know, or work for Robin and not work for you.
That's right.
Everybody's body absorbs things differently and reacts differently and so on and so forth. You know, I can understand, you know, a lot of times with NAMI, you hear people, families who come to support groups and talk about their loved one, and they'll say that, my daughter quit taking her medication, refuses to take it. Mm-hmm. And when you do a little digging, you find out that the daughter maybe is 22, 21, something like that, and was 120 pounds and gained 80 pounds because of the medication. Now you want a 22-year-old girl to weigh 200 pounds when she used to weigh 120? I mean, I wouldn't take it either, you know. It's just, you know, I mean, but unfortunately, that's part of the problem.
That's right.
And if that's the only medication that, quote unquote, works, what do you do, you know?
Right.
We have four kids, and my youngest son has schizophrenia. And that's how I got involved. My wife and I got involved in NAMI. But I seen he was on a medication that and it's funny because he considers himself the runt of the litter. Or, you know, even his sister is about an inch taller than he is, you know. So he's like 5'7", somewhere in there. And he blew up on this, I forget what it was, whatever medication it was, he blew up. And it's like you see pictures back then and you say, my God, you know. I mean, would anybody want to take that?
Right.
You know, or all of a sudden they'd start tapping his foot.
Right.
So, we can fix that. So they give him something else to stop tapping his foot. So now he starts tapping his hand, you know. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Time out, you know. Enough of this, you know. So I can understand where people, I don't agree with it, but I can understand it, put it that way. But I guess I have to ask, is ECT safe?
It's very safe. It's as safe as any other medical procedure that we do. As with any medical procedure, it comes with some risks and it comes with some inconveniences, such as if you needed carpal tunnel. You know, after you had carpal tunnel surgery, you have a 3-week recovery and you're probably going to have some pain and you'll have some limited mobility. But the end result after 3 weeks is that your carpal tunnel is better. So people, we tend in the U.S. not to treat mental health like a medical condition, but it is a medical condition.
Yes, it is.
We still try to separate them, and they're really not separate.
No, they're not.
They're not at all, and we tend to treat both differently. We give medical conditions different respect and recovery periods and recuperation periods, that with mental health, we want that quick fix and we want everything to, you know, happen without yesterday and without any long-term commitments on our own part.
Right.
So it is extremely safe. There are some side effects. You can get a headache, you can have a jaw ache, you can have some muscle aches from the treatment itself. But you can get all those things from going to the gym.
Right.
Which is why I don't go to the gym. No, I'm kidding.
I go, but I know what you're talking about. You know. But, you know.
But as with any procedure that there's anesthesia administered, there is consents that need to be signed, and we do have to tell you some of the awful things that could occur. But we are all there to provide safe care. People, there's a board-certified anesthesiologist. There's a board-certified psychiatrist that administers the ECT. And there is a registered nurse. So you have three people with one patient during the treatment.
It's just, like you were saying about mental illness not being considered a medical illness.
Correct.
Well, your brain is an organ. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm no doctor or don't have half the education you do, but the brain is an organ. So is your heart, your liver, your lungs. If they can get sick, why can't your brain get sick?
Absolutely.
And so if your brain gets sick, why is it ostracized from other medical conditions?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that's mental illness.
Right. What's the difference between diabetes and heart disease?
And really, and you stop and think about it, there is no difference.
It isn't.
And, I'm not big on surveys, or such, because I think you can make numbers say whatever you'd like them to say. Having spent a lot of time in the corporate world, I know that for a fact. You can do that. I don't say I did it, but I know corporations that did do it. But they're saying now, the Mental Health Association, I believe it was, did a 4-year or 5-year study, and they come up with 1 in 4 people are affected by mental illness.
Oh, absolutely.
It used to be 1 in 5. Now they say 1 in 4. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure that that's correct. I think it's even 1 in 3. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times. We were talking before, like my hospitalization down in Maryland, just talking to some of the nurses. One of the charge nurses down there was saying her son has severe bipolar, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, is very violent, mm-hmm, threatened to kill her a couple times. And, we were talking, and then this other nurse came in at night, and we were talking, and she finds, her son is, and it's like, it's like you either know somebody, or you heard of somebody, or you have a relative, or you have a neighbor, or whatever. It's just, I don't know. It's scary, in a way, that they're not accepting mental illness, and that's what NAMI's fighting for, to break the stigma attached to it.
And just because you have mental illness doesn't mean also that you won't have physical ailments either.
Right, exactly.
So we have to start treating people and conditions as a whole and as a medical condition.
And, it's just, it doesn't mean that you can't go on with your life.
Absolutely.
And live a well, organized living.
Right.
We do a woman and I do a presentation monthly for educational services here in Flemington. And we always start, she always starts because that's above me with the PowerPoints and all that jazz. But she lists on a screen, on two screens, all these famous people with mental illness or had mental illness. And there's always a couple that just amaze me. Winston Churchill, mm-hmm, carried England on his back for 7 years during the Second World War. He suffered from severe depression. Thomas Jefferson, and everybody, Thomas Jefferson, mm-hmm, Thomas Jefferson. He had agoraphobia, mm-hmm, where he wouldn't go in a room where there's 5 or 6 people. When he was writing the Declaration of Independence, he wouldn't call, but he'd reach out to Ben Franklin, meet him on a street corner, hand him the papers, and Franklin would go in and present them, because he wouldn't go in because there was too many people. Yet he could go on a balcony and talk to 5,000 people, but he was on a balcony.
Right, he was removed.
He was removed from actually physical contact. So it's just like, you know, you just shake your head, you know, and it's not, yeah, there's a lot of actresses and actors and musicians that suffer, you know, but there's a lot of people like, you know, Beethoven.
I think even Einstein.
Said, yeah. Yep. And you know, it's just...
Right. And, you know, bipolar, depression, schizophrenia, what's the difference between that and having diabetes or heart disease or high blood pressure? And they all have to be treated...
Or a combination of any of the
or
two.
Or a combination of any of them. And they all have to be treated, you know, in a multidisciplinary effect.
Right.
You know, so I don't think that ECT is the one thing for any of that. I think ECT is a tool to be used for when people are in a place that they really need it. It's not a cure, just like angioplasty isn't a cure for heart disease. ECT is not a cure for depression, but it's a medical intervention, or it can be a life-saving intervention, like angioplasty can be for some people.
Right.
And
exactly.
Then as with any of the other mental illnesses, you have to eat right. You have to know stress relief. You have to take your medicines appropriately. If ECT could help you reduce the medicines, well, that could be a good thing too, just like angioplasty can help reduce heart medicines if you have it. So we really, as a culture, need to look at all of this, you know, as part and parcel in a multidisciplinary approach, and that, you know, your life can go on. You can be Albert Einstein and, you know, have some mental illness, but look at what he did.
Right, exactly. Robin, when you go out and try to you know, give community outreach, do you mention ECT to people when the situation would occur that it would fit?
And I think you said it right. When it depends on the audience I'm chatting with, I don't hesitate to speak about ECT because it is a very viable solution to somebody's severe, like major depression.
Right.
But I address it because I often speak with people in the public that just don't have a mental health background. And what is the movie everybody thinks of? One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Right.
And even when Lisa just said a seizure, when she says a seizure in the current modality of ECT, she's talking a seizure when your pinky finger quivers or your big toe will quiver. That's the extent of the seizure. And so I have to tell people that it has come very far. And also, that was Hollywood. So they over-dramatized it just for the effect. But that's everybody's visual, what they go to when somebody says ECT.
Well, it's just like A Beautiful Mind.
Yes.
About the Princeton professor who just recently got killed in a car action.
Nash,
but it was a Hollywood.
Well,
he didn't see visual.
Right.
All right? And seeing visual is very, very, very rare.
Right.
I mean, my son has voices,
the auditory, right?
But and he answers them sometimes. Medication has helped reduce that, but you know, but he doesn't see visual. He doesn't see visual thing. But who would understand the movie if they didn't see that in Hollywood?
Enough.
It wouldn't be dramatic. Nobody would have gone to the movie, you know. So, but you know, you try to tell people that's not all about what it's about because that is so rare. It is almost minute, you know.
Right.
But yes, it happens in maybe one in 500,000 people or whatever, but it's so minute that they had to do it because it was a Hollywood movie and that was the way to get it out there. But, you know, I think when people are having this procedure, do they feel discomfort when they're having the seizure?
Not at all.
I mean, not the seizure, but the
when they're having the treatment, right?
Right.
Not at all. They're given anesthesia, so most people wake up and they're like, "Are you sure? Are you sure it happened?" So, if anybody's ever had anesthesia before for any type of surgery, you know, it's kind of like they say, okay, you're going to sleep now. And you say, okay. And then you wake up in a recovery room. You have no idea of, you know, any memory of, you could have been on the surgery table for 3 hours. You have absolutely no memory of it. And that's how it is for the ECT. And, you know, I wanted to bring up another point where you're talking about the organ, like the brain's an organ, a heart's an organ. You know, our two main organs that drive our body is our brain and our heart. And they're the two organs that have their own electrical conduction system. Nobody thinks twice if somebody has to have a pacemaker implanted. And they're wires that are actually burrowed in the wall of the heart muscle and makes that heart beat about 60 times a minute, depending on the demand. And nobody says, is this going to burn my heart? Is it going to give me heart damage? Right. Is it going to, you know, zap me? Is it? Thank you. I feel so much better.
Yeah.
And so the same thing is true. But again, we just have that different idea about our brain and mental health. But it's the same thing. We use electric for the heart. We, you know, people die. Mm-hmm. We bring them back to life with the electric, depending on their arrhythmia. And it's the same thing with the brain. We use actually a lot less electric to give that treatment.
Right.
But people still have this idea that, you know, it's going to do the, you know, cause brain damage or fry their brain. That sounds like an awful connotation, but that's what a lot of people think.
Right.
But nobody asks, you know, oh, when you, you know, go in and give me that pacemaker, is it each time it zips, is it going to be frying my heart? Because it doesn't. That's not how the electric works.
Right.
Smart. That's a very good analogy.
You know, working in all the different areas I have, I try to compare it with medicine because that's what we all get.
And, you know, it's how long has, this is just, then we have to take a break, but how long has ECT been around?
Oh, boy, now you're going to get me on that one, huh?
Well, just a guess. You know,
I believe in a man in, oh, my goodness. You know, I can't honestly answer. Oh, no, way longer than that.
Really?
Way, way, way longer than that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is where I need my doctors. This is the only, no.
It's the only time you need them, right?
No, I heard that. I'm kidding.
Yeah, sure you were. You're laughing. They're not.
You know, I believe it was back in the 1800s that they started.
You kidding me?
Mm-mm.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
No, I just, you know, I was just curious, you know, has it been around 30 years, 40 years, you know?
Yeah, and they've tried different ways. I mean, they've tried insulin-induced seizures. They've tried other medication-induced seizures. They've obviously used the electrical-induced seizures, and they found that works the best.
I have a question when we come back, but we have to take a break, and it's about the seizures. So you're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Chris Phelan, president of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, and I'd like to congratulate our Leadership Hunterdon Class of 2015 for all of their success and accomplishments. Amy Anderson, Jeannie Aversa, Joni Cafaro, Colleen Doerr, Carmel Gettings, Richard Hall, Michelle Cavanaugh, Elizabeth Lowe, Leslie Parica, and Dolores Van Pelt. They have truly accomplished much over these last 9 months. I encourage you to visit the Chamber's website, huntertonchamber.org, and read their white paper. Their white paper will contribute greatly to the future economic growth here in Hunterdon County. Also, please feel free to visit the Hunterdon Chamber's YouTube page, and there you will see a great video encapsulating all of their accomplishments, all of their growth, and the continued success, the real impact of Leadership Hunterdon here in Hunterdon County.
Convulsions and high fever were good for improving.
If you're wondering what we're doing, well, I asked the question how long ECT was around, and Lisa said 1800s, and I said, what? You know? So Robin whipped out her phone because she's got one of these impressive Google hoogie wadgies, and she's looking it up. But in the meantime, I guess I have a question about the seizure part of it. Mm-hmm. Why would you induce seizure to someone who is depressed?
Well, again, it has to do with the electrical conduction system. Okay. Just like, you know, we talked about the heart as an organ, and when things kind of go wrong in that, we kind of work again with that electrical conduction. So, you know, the brain is so complicated that we honestly don't have all the answers to it
yet. Of course not, right.
You know, so that is one thing in medicine. We walk around and think we have all the answers, but the brain is just an amazing, amazing tool. So the idea of causing the seizure is they do know a couple things. They do know that to do the seizure does elicit serotonin and dopamine, and it also helps those receptors in the brain to be more receptive. So that's what helps the feeling of wellness, to elicit and make more serotonin and dopamine, and also to be able to absorb it and utilize it.
All right. My son, who has schizophrenia, has been epileptic since he's 5. Mm-hmm. What type of seizure occurs when you have ECT? Because there's numerous types, as you well know.
That's correct. So this is a what you would, most people would consider it to be a grand mal seizure. But the whole difference between being epileptic and having a seizure condition is you never know when that seizure is going to occur, where it's going to occur, how long it's going to last, you know, so on and so forth. This, you're in a facility hooked up to heart monitors and blood pressure cuffs with a board-certified anesthesiologist and a nurse who has normally a critical care background, or at least has an advanced cardiac life support certification, and you have a specialized ECT physician. So these are short seizures. We're looking for about 15 to 20 seconds, even up to 40 seconds, depending. Right. So it's a very short, controlled seizure. The body doesn't have the seizure at all. We have medicines nowadays that relaxes all of the body muscles. But the brain does purposely have that controlled grand mal seizure, if you would. But it comes from a different stimulus than somebody with a seizure does. And again, it's controlled. So it makes it a lot different.
All right. You had mentioned some side effects. Mm-hmm. Would you reiterate those?
Sure. Most of the side effects are temporary, and they're from the medicine that we use to relax the muscles, because the muscles, again, have their own little bit of energy in them. So in order to relax them, they have to quiver, or the word's called fasciculate, to actually release. So it's kind of a little bit like you went to the gym and you did a couple reps. So the first couple treatments, you can have some muscle soreness. Each treatment that gets better, your muscles get acclimated to that movement. When people are asleep, we also tilt their chin up because it opens their airway.
Right.
Most of us nowadays, particularly with iPads and smartphones, our chin's always down. So you find stretching muscles that you didn't once have. We give a medicine to dry out saliva because you'd be surprised how much you can't swallow. You're only asleep for 3 minutes, but you'd be surprised at how much saliva you make in 3 minutes. So you'll have a dry mouth, and they give that in almost any surgery setting. You'll have a dry mouth. And then the thing that people worry most about with ECT is memory loss. So I don't know how. So to get into the memory loss issue, people who are depressed tend to have memory issues anyway, because memory is the act of being engaged. When you can't be engaged because you're so depressed, you can't make memories. So, you know, years ago, back in the 1930s, which we pretty much confirmed is when ECT really started to be used in the U.S., you know, we didn't understand it all, and people really did have memory loss. Nowadays, we understand the seizure, the electrical doses and so forth. So they really don't have memory loss. It's not, if they do have memory loss, it's more like, what did I eat last night? And I know everybody's at home wondering, what did I eat last night? you know, things that don't matter to you, because if you're sitting there saying, you know, I think I might want to die, I really feel really awful, I'm hopeless, I'm helpless, you're not making memories because you're not engaged in a conversation.
Right, right.
So if we can improve your depression, your memory will improve. So most people will say, I don't remember feeling that bad, or, you know, they might not remember a conversation, but it's not the memory loss that was equated with it years ago.
Is ECT used with people who have, like, schizophrenia or bipolar or...
Yes, definitely.
I mean, not just depression.
Correct. We talk about depression, but we do use it in bipolar depression.
Right.
It's actually one of the few documented effects, because bipolar depression is very resistant to medications, extremely resistant. And right now, the American Psychiatric Association, they really only recognize about three treatments, and some of them are a combination of drugs.
Right.
But the third one is ECT. It just has shown that it is superior in bipolar depression. We've also used it sometimes in real severe mania. It can be utilized in that. Our center doesn't use it so much, but some of the teaching institutions will really use it in severe mania that's not responding to medicine. And in schizophrenia, it, again, won't cure or change the course of schizophrenia, but I've had people say with the auditory hallucinations, it's been remarkable for them that they would have had voices for years and years and years, and they'll report that it really does work well for the voices. So again, it's not a cure.
No,
they still have
right.
to take their medicines, maybe less. We've had people who actually go back to work and function who weren't able to function because the voices were so intrusive. So, you know, it can definitely work for any of those diagnoses.
Okay. Is it ever considered a first-line treatment?
Absolutely. It's no longer considered a last resort treatment, is what it used to be. We used
right.
to have to run through all of the meds, and, you know, the person, and the longer a person is depressed, the deeper and more resistant their depression gets. It's kind of the same. The longer somebody remains diabetic with a high blood sugar, the harder it is to get that back under control. So if somebody has made a severe suicide attempt, a very serious suicide attempt, it can be considered as a first-line treatment at that time for them, even if they haven't done medicine yet, if we really need to get them better quick.
Do you feel, or I shouldn't say do you see when families come to you with a loved one who either has bipolar or severe depression or whatever, and have heard about ECT and want to know, do you find that families are reluctant to do it, or they say, oh yeah, let's go, you know,
most,
and what about the patient?
Yeah, most times for the most part. I mean, not, you know, nothing is ever 100%.
Right,
but most
exactly.
times, the patient is walking in saying, I will do anything. I will lay down on the floor right now. You don't even have to give me anesthesia. I want to feel better. I am just tired of living like this. And typically, it's the family that's resistant or cautious or concerned about it. And what I again try to say is if your loved one was sitting here with chest pain, you'd be asking me, how soon can I take them to the cath lab? You know, but again, we treat mental health different. And, you know, sometimes people say, oh, well, maybe they're not that bad. Well, how can you feel how bad somebody feels? And frequently the patient sitting in front of me thinks that they're the worst case that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has ever felt this
right.
bad. Nobody. You know, they're thinking, you've never seen anybody as bad as I am right
sure.
now.
They, you know, their situation is always the worst.
And they and I believe
and
them
in their
to
mind
truly
it is.
Feel that.
Yeah,
because
oh, absolutely.
They feel
absolutely.
You can't even explain the hopelessness and the helplessness and the anxiety and the overwhelming things that they feel. It's just a
sure.
terrible feeling. And, you know, the family, of course, who loves them is concerned that this is going to do more harm than good.
And sometimes families, shall we say, just don't get it.
They don't.
Know?
They
I
may,
mean, let's
right,
face
because,
it, they don't.
Well,
you
because
know?
Then sometimes loved ones aren't as honest with the family members as they probably need to be, too, because they're trying to protect their feelings also.
Yeah, and I've seen many times, like through support groups and so on and so forth, dealing with families who have someone in their family who has a mental illness. And a lot of times I'll say women are like mother bears. Hold the baby close, hold the cubs in close to them, and you know, which is fine. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that, but sometimes they overprotect them. And the fathers are usually, oh, that door's busted. I can fix it. You know, I can fix the window. I can replace that. I can start that car, you know, fix it. And they don't quite understand with mental illness, there is no fix.
No.
You don't fix it. I mean, people, my son will have it for the rest of his life.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to be fixed.
Right.
He's come, I can't tell you how far.
Right.
When he first attempted suicide twice. He was hospitalized for a little over 2.5 years continuously. Carrier. Then he went to Trenton Psych.
Mm-hmm.
He was there for almost 20 months. Then they transferred him to Hagedorn. He was there for another 11 months. So, you know, it was back. And then when he got out, he was in and out more times than we can care to count.
Right.
And it wasn't for 2 weeks here or three. It was like months, mm-hmm. 6 months here, 8 months there, you know, that sort of thing. But right now he's got his own apartment in Flemington.
Oh, fantastic.
And he's about, I want to say a couple months ago, he got a part-time job at BJ's.
Fantastic.
So he hands out stuff that they want to sell. Like you see these people at hand, oh, do you want to try
sure.
some soda? You know,
right.
But he does that. And, you know, a couple days a week and he's happy. He loves it, you
right.
know, so. But he's come a long way.
Right.
And, but, you know, it's still, you can still see where the illness has taken so much of his
right.
life,
right.
so
mm-hmm.
to speak.
Right.
Yes, he's doing wonderful and we're very thankful for that. And, mm-hmm. you know, but it's still, and I can see people, you know, almost saying, oh, okay, do ECT because, you know, we're at the last resort of, you
right.
know, we've tried everything else and, you know, the medicines aren't working and this isn't working and, you know, so.
It's so sad to see people like that. You know, people come in and they're already so worried ECT is not going to work because they've been years with medicines
right.
feeling like this. And, you know, I'll frequently hear, I'm so afraid this isn't going to work. I'm like, well, mm-hmm. you know, and that's kind of a bad
right.
place to start
sure.
in, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel very
no, I understand
badly
that,
for them.
But I understand their feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, totally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just.
And, you know, sometimes I think that also, again, what we don't do well in mental health, sorry for anybody who takes offense to this, but say you had a cancer diagnosis. You would sit there and want to talk to the physician, you know, do I do chemo? Do I do immunotherapy? Do I do radiation? Do I go a holistic route? What are the side effects? What are my choices? What are the We don't tend to do that with mental health. We say, okay, we'll try this pill for 6 weeks.
Exactly.
You come back after 6 weeks.
We do.
Maybe a little better. I'm like, okay, well, then let's try this pill for 6 weeks. Nobody
or
goes,
mix both of them.
Or mix both of them. And nobody goes over, you know, people can have, you know, this 80-pound weight gain and go into what's called metabolic syndrome.
Sure.
Which then their triglycerides are elevated and their blood sugar's elevated and they're at risk for serious heart disease.
Or right.
They can get tardive dyskinesia or they...
Absolutely.
You know, there's we kind of don't do that well. You know, like maybe after the second or third medication trial... We should probably start saying to people, you could start thinking about ECT here, you know, because we have a whole other medication list to try, but they come with these side effects. ECT kind of do it for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you know, and then,
you know what bothers me, and I'm not labeling doctors, okay, believe me, I'm not, because I know a lot of them are very good, and, right. You know, the ones my son has seen and both psychiatrists and medical doctors for his epilepsy and everything. So I'm not knocking that. But it seems to me in a lot of cases with people I've talked to and dealt with over the years, the first thing they want to do is issue a pill.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, here's a med, 15 minutes. Oh, time's up. Here's a med. You know, mm-hmm. Then the next patient comes in. And I understand they're overbooked. I understand there's not a lot of psychiatrists in the county. And, you know, and where did I hear? Somewhere that we should have something like 34 psychiatrists in Hunterdon County, and we have something like 8 or
maybe
somewhere
nationwide,
around there.
And I think it's only going to get worse.
It's brutal, too. But in Hunterdon County alone. And so I understand they're overworked and they're, you know, under a lot of pressure and so on and so forth. But I think maybe we should look a little deeper before we issue the pill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, because a lot of times they don't work.
Right.
And a lot of times they do. I'm not saying that they, you know,
but
a lot of times they don't. But I mean, the first thing it seems like is they write a script.
Right.
And I understand that when they write the script, they're going by past performances.
Mm-hmm.
What has worked the most over the period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily what's going to work for every individual.
Right.
Because everybody, as we said earlier, everybody's body's different.
Right.
And it's just drives me crazy, actually.
And sometimes, too, with depression, you know, people will stay with their family physicians and they don't go to a psychiatrist, even though there is a shortage of them.
Right.
If you had cancer, would you stay with your family physician? You would go to a psychiatrist.
Sure.
I mean, that's one of the things we do require for ECT if somebody wants to do it as an outpatient. They have already they need to be established with a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, medicine's so broad nowadays, and it is a specialty. You know,
sure.
And psychiatrists do know the medicines better than, you know, family physicians are dealing with a lot of things from infections to, and they can't know all the ins and outs of some of the combinations of drugs. So.
And, you know, what's like in my case with, I was saying I have AFib, so I have a radiologist.
Cardiologist. Uh-huh, right.
But I also have a GP.
Right.
And they talk to each other.
Right.
Maybe not over the phone or whatever, but they email or
they'll send letters
or they send the thing. Oh, Larry was in today and this and this was his blood work. And they send it to the radiologist.
Cardiologist.
I'll get it right. But anyway, and vice versa.
Right.
So, but I think that's great. If more and more doctors did that.
Yeah.
I think it would be awesome.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of them do. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think as many as should.
And again, mental health. The psychiatrists aren't sending letters to GPs.
Right.
To my knowledge. I mean, there may be the few outliers
out
there, but because again, mental health is kept so confidential, and normally because the patient wants to. Again, because we as society treat it differently.
Exactly.
It just kind of keeps looping back. Yeah.
Does treatments vary with the patient, or is it pretty much the same amount for everybody?
We all have a different seizure threshold, So, a young female requires a lot less energy than an older male. It is a scientific fact. Men do have thicker skulls. Sorry, it's science.
No comment. I'm not saying anything.
Me neither.
You know. I'm just saying science. So what?
I had an acupuncturist as a guest, and she stuck a needle in my head, and I didn't even feel it. So, you know.
So you got a pretty thick
skull. I got a thick skull. Or she was good at what she did, or one or the other. Yeah.
So it is very individually titrated to the patient. Right. Each individual patient, it's very titrated to them.
And do people have to take off work to do this?
Yeah. You know, again, treat it with the respect of any other medical intervention. So we don't want you cannot drive the day, because we do ECT both as for inpatients and outpatients.
Okay.
Depending on, you know, everybody's different. If we need to keep you safe, if you're having a high level of suicidality or homicidality, or you're really not taking care of yourself, if you're not getting out of bed, you're not eating, then maybe inpatient might be what's best for you at that time. But there's people who, you know, have great supportive families. You do have to have somebody drive you to and from ECT,
right,
because you did have anesthesia, had a small amount of
course,
small seizure.
Right.
So you shouldn't be behind the wheel. So yes, you can't work that day. We do have people who will try to work the off days, the Tuesdays and Thursdays, because we give it Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I really, again, recommend that you treat this like you would as if you had any other type of surgery, because 9 times out of 10, work is one of the stressors of what's mm-hmm. sending you kind of over the edge.
And when you go to this treatment, every time you go, you induce a seizure?
We do.
Okay.
Yep, that's our purpose.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just like every time you go for chemo, they really give you chemo.
Well, yeah. Okay. I wasn't quite the analogy I was thinking of, but okay. You know. But I like her. She's all right. I don't know if I ever want to be her patient. But
Wait a minute. Have you been talking to my mother?
But yes, Robin, you may speak.
actually, just to piggyback on what Lisa was just saying, people do come to our inpatient very, they're in the throes of their mental illness and do need to be in a safe, structured environment to make sure they're safe. And so if they go to across the street, literally from a Princeton hospital, mm-hmm. Princeton Mental Health, Princeton House, across the street to where the ECT suite is, and they could do that while inpatient.
Yeah.
They are escorted across the
Absolutely.
Right?
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then to address what Lisa's saying about how far within the medical community the ECT treatments have, the fact that you can do it outpatient.
Yeah.
You can come in the morning, have an ECT. Like she said, it takes a half of a second, and more you're getting over the medication.
Right.
They
there
gave
about
you.
2 hours, but mm-hmm. that's more to recover from.
And you go home.
Yeah.
After, I mean, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Compared to 30 years ago, 20 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
And we are
yeah.
trying to encourage more private psychiatrists to maybe refer or introduce ECT a little bit sooner in the course of people's treatment, because, you know, a lot of people we get, they're out on disability from work for this. Most of them would have rather have taken 3 weeks off to get the ECT than, but you know, be out for a year, 6 months because
sure.
they can't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
sure.
And they're just getting more and more hopeless.
And that's a perfect segue into telling people the phone number to make an ECT referral.
Oh.
Well, you're jumping ahead because I have that down here.
I have to make sure it's in there.
Go ahead.
Well, if anybody is interested in an ECT evaluation, we do conduct them. Your family members can come. We're located at 1000 Herrentown Road in Princeton, New Jersey. Our phone number is 609-613-4780. As I mentioned earlier in the show, you do have to already be seeing a psychiatrist, because we won't act as your psychiatrist. Right. We don't order meds or anything. Right. We're there to guide you through this treatment. But your psychiatrist knows you best and knows all the other nuances with you. So, yeah, we'd be happy to schedule anybody for an ECT evaluation.
Why don't you give the phone number again?
And it's 609-613-4780. And you can come in and get evaluated. It doesn't mean that you have to do it. You can meet with the ECT psychiatrist, meet with
me. That's what happens, right? I mean, normally that's what happens.
That's exactly right.
Say
you get evaluated first because it's not always appropriate for everybody.
Right.
Or maybe people just want to investigate. Maybe they're going to start a new medication trial, but they want to have a backup plan because, you know, maybe in 6 weeks if this isn't working, I want to know I have something else kind of as the backup plan.
Right. Does insurance cover most of this?
Insurance has always covered it. Medicare covers 80%.
Okay.
And depending on your commercial insurance plans and depending on who you work for, you know, it can vary in the degrees of the coverage.
And if you have Medicare, you could also maybe have a backup.
Most people will have an ARP or a retirement plan
or whatever.
But if you didn't, it's still per treatment for the Medicare itself. It's about $30 per treatment, which is the remainder.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, it's not. Cheaper than medicines.
I was going to say.
Cheaper than the medicine you were on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then if perhaps you're not thinking about ECT just as one sort of option, but you're thinking of getting a full psychiatric evaluation, you can also call Princeton House to see if the level of care you are at is actually inpatient. Mm-hmm. Because they will do a over-the-phone assessment and will say whether that is acute enough to be in a hospital. And then you could address the ECT as a patient that way, or you could be in our outpatient and still, you know, you're getting really good therapy and you're coming three times a week and you're just not, that weight of that depression is still on you, that your psychiatrist at the outpatient level could perhaps say, let's try this as an adjunct to.
And I've done that for people who have called me who don't have a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
I'll refer them to one of our outpatients because we have several, five now. And so I'll say, well, you know, let's get you started there, you know, do a couple of weeks of the outpatient program. Maybe that will improve you. But if it doesn't, then you're established with a psychiatrist. We talk with our psychiatrist and then we can get you over for ECT.
Okay. In the last couple minutes, do either of you have anything you want to? Yes, Robin. All right. You don't have to raise your hand. You're not in class.
Well, I do want to make sure that people know how to access our inpatient and outpatient. Mm-hmm. Because, like Lisa said, that is a wonderful example of somebody just says, help. I just need help. We could start with a good assessment and then tease out what your needs are. For our inpatient, and that would be for a very acute level of care, is 800-242-2550. And that would be someone who would ask, the caller themselves has to be the patient,
mm-hmm.
and say what their symptoms are, why they think they need to be in a hospital. If they say, you know, life really isn't worth living, I really have a plan all mapped out, we will say, please come in. We want to make sure you're okay. And
would you send a first responder out for that?
Oh, every call is different.
Yeah.
They have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone's sitting there saying on the phone, well, I'm thinking.
We do wellness checks.
It's kind of, I mean, yeah, they may not be going to act on it, but you don't know. And that's the whole point, right?
I have to say, first responders are just wonderful options for us. Because we could ask the police officers to do a wellness check on them.
Mm-hmm.
You have your EMTs. You have so many community supports to help you, especially when you really are fearful for somebody's life.
Sure.
And so that's our acute level of care would be where someone like that would come mm-hmm. on in. And then our outpatient, which is a partial hospitalization, 3 days a week, 5 days a week, from 9 to 3:30, thereabouts, depending on the program and all, for about 10 days, 2 weeks. just to make sure that they're stable, that they're functioning on a well enough level to kind of titrate down their level of care to an IOP, which is 3 days a week, 3 hours a week. And that number is 888-437-1610.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be here. And I really would like to have you both back, because I think there's some more things I could come up with to ask. And, you know, it's ironic. I've noticed that treatments have changed, and they change sometimes dramatically and fast. Let's try that. You know,
the new fads.
So I want to thank you both. Lisa, I thank you so much for taking the time to come.
Thank you.
And Robin, again, thank you for coming again.
It's always my pleasure.
And it's always a pleasure having you. And like I said, I promise you, I will be in touch with you and to have you back. And just keep up the good work.
Okay.
And remember, folks, mental health matters. We'll see you again next week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Headline News, I'm Ron Taylor. France has presented the nation's highest honor to three Americans and a Briton who overpowered a man shooting at passengers on a train traveling from Brussels to Paris.
French President François Hollande presented the Legion of Honor to the three Americans who stopped the shooting, Alex Scarlato, Spencer Stone, and Anthony Sadler. A Briton, Chris Norman, also received the medal. Stone says all three of them jumped into action when they heard shots ring out aboard the train.
All three of us started punching him, and then I was able to grab him again, choke him unconscious.
I'm Chuck Gomez.
IndyCar driver Justin Wilson is in a coma after flying debris hit him during the ABC Supply 500 at Pennsylvania's Pocono Raceway. Wilson's injury happened Sunday after driver Sage Karam crashed into a wall, sending debris flying onto the track. Tropical storm Danny looks like it's falling apart. Forecasters say the first named storm of the Atlantic hurricane season will probably be a tropical depression by this morning and should dissipate in a few days. This is USA Headline News.
I had Belvita breakfast biscuits this morning. Then what did I do? Made my bed, fed my fish, got dressed, cleaned the dish, remembered to floss, but still didn't do it. Ran a lap on the track, dropped my phone, didn't crack, got in before the boss, made sure that he knew it. Oh, hey, you just getting here?
Crunchy Belvita breakfast biscuits are made with delicious ingredients and carefully baked to release steady energy all morning long. Share your morning win. Belvita.
Morning win.
The 2 for $5 deal at Burger King just got hotter. That's right, we just spiced it up with the new extra-long jalapeno cheeseburger. Feel the flame with two all-beef patties side-by-side stacked with fiery jalapenos. They're like little green firecrackers exploding in your mouth. Oh yeah, did we mention you can get two sandwiches at Burger King for just $5? But if that's too much fire for one mouth, you can mix and match with a Big King, Big Fish, or Original Chicken Sandwich. Only at Burger King. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.
Former DNC chair is advising Hillary Clinton to stop acting like an attorney when it comes to questions about her email.
One thing I try to do is get the lawyers to not have everything to say about what you present. You've got to think about this in plain language.
On NBC's Meet the Press, ex-Vermont Governor Howard Dean says there's no substance to claims the former Secretary of State emailed classified materials at the time. Dean also shrugged off the idea that Vice President Joe Biden might enter the White House race, saying he doesn't think there's room in the Democratic field.
If Joe gets in the race, Joe gets in the race. I think that's a tough one for him. He's a very good guy. He's been a terrific vice president, but he has 100% name recognition, and he's already behind Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
Fire crews in Washington state are more optimistic thanks to favorable weather and the expected arrival of new equipment. Milder winds yesterday helped firefighters extend containment lines, and 20 large fire engines and 10 water tankers are expected to be in service sometime today. 70 fires are burning in California, Idaho, and Montana. This is USA Headline News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000,